The Guardian.
Fond greetings. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I'm Paul McInnes, and on this week's show...
Big up the Guardian, because you know, say, we not deal with the small paper, but the big one there we deal with, you understand? Oi, I made it, mum.
That is a real, true endorsement. That's the sound of the Ragga Twins, who, as well as providing us with our first ever ident, will be taking us back to the early 90s and the era where British dance and urban music first got it on. We'll be reviewing new music, as you might expect, from Primal Scream, Annie and DJ Q. And one final fat line will be drawn under Glastonbury. All that coming up, but first, it's Tricky. They call you cancel estate, they call you can't go straight. They call you crime rate, they call you can't go straight. And you're bending all the rules where you bury your toes. Bending all the rules where you bury your toes. That's Council Estate by Tricky, the lead single from his eighth studio album, Noel West Boy. Rosie Swash, she joins me in the podio. Hello, Rosie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Oh, really? Only all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. You know I'm hungover.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to confess that to listeners. Everybody thinks we're teetotal.
Not that's after listening to the Glastonbury podcast, I don't think.
No, they just thought we were on very heavy medication to get us through the weekend. Have you ever conducted an interview when the interviewee spends half his time skinning up?
Sadly not.
No, it's an interesting experience and one I underwent when I met Tricky a couple of weeks ago. And one of the key thing about it is it's very difficult to maintain eye contact because, you know, like eyes are the windows to the soul and you're really trying to get in deep in with them. But when they're actually concentrating on Whistler, it's difficult. But if my experience of meeting the Tricky kid is anything to go by, marijuana does tend to keep the mood upbeat. He was very chatty, very garrulous. And not in any way a moody so-and-so, which is what a lot of people say about him. I mean, he was also pretty frank, I thought. So when I started by asking whether, as a resident of LA for 5 years, he was a little out of touch with the UK. He wasn't having much of it.
Well, I haven't stopped clubbing, Mac, because all my family's still in Bristol, so I'm back here all the time.
And what are the things you notice as being different when you come back?
Like, people living next door to each other who don't know who... And they don't know who they're living next door. And I think some of that is to do with... technology, music, movies. Like, for instance, I wanted to be the Specials when I was a kid. Now, kids want to be 50 Cent. But how can you be 50 Cent when you're English? We got a different culture. When I was growing up, we were rude boys, right? And we all had a uniform dress. But everything was different, though. So you all might wear tonic trousers, but you might wear a different colour in a different day and a different pair of brogues. Now it's all Nike trainers. Trousers hanging down the pants. Around your ankles, and baseball caps. It's like we're becoming clones of America, but really bad clones. And that's why English music is dying. There couldn't be a Specials now, because these kids were individuals. Now, it's just one person. Like, Jay-Z, to me, it has got no dress sense. But he wore a pinstripe shirt in a video, then kids in New York started wearing them, urban kids. Now, here, you got them wearing them. We're picking up bad habits. I'd rather pick up bad habits from my own country. And it's like a hardcore English guy, right? Could be in a bar with a gun, have an argument with someone, be so angry, and glass a guy 15 times and not even get the gun out. Because it's a different kind of violence. Now kids go like this. Man, that's not English violence. I'm not saying English violence ain't as bad, but it's a different kind of violence. When I was growing up, you had gangster films, you had The Professional, you had Get Carter, Scarface, one of the best gangster films ever made. There's only two free pieces of violence in Scarface. Now, you get films where are shit, but someone's getting shot 20 times to keep kids' attention. Capitalism realised now they can make money out of violence, so all the video games are violent. You know, you could shoot someone 50 times on a video game, they keep popping up. 50 Cent's been shot 7 times. Takes a fear out of being shot almost. And that's starting to affect English culture and our street culture.
So do you think there is a direct link between, just to pick as an example, a 50 Cent and what is going on?
No, not just 50 Cent. Movies, video games, music.
a lot of musicians, a lot of people in the entertainment industry, a lot of the capitalists in the entertainment industry would insist there is no link. There is no link between
definitely
people.
A link. I think there's definitely a link. Definitely a link. If my euro is 50 cent and I know this guy is willing to go to the street with guns, you want to be like your hero. How am I going to be like him? If I can't get in a recording studio, I've got no money, I'm from a council flat, so basically I'm going to get my respect.
Is it this change in culture that's made you look back on your own youth in this album?
Yeah, in a way, because it's like, I was so lucky, man.
Do you find yourself then getting nostalgic about your youth? I mean, listening particularly to Council Estate, that, I mean, that's, it's a great tune, it's raucous, and I don't get a sense of, like, happy nostalgia about that youth, even though it's a very positive anthem about, you know, making the most of yourself. But do you find yourself looking back on that time with nostalgia now?
Yeah, because we're losing it.
No.
Like, I feel sorry for the kids growing up. They missed the two-tone, they missed the punk, and they missed all this great stuff we had in England, or passed from England. You walk and you see Teddy Boys, you walk and you see punks, you Rude Boys, all this different music, all this different influx. Now the only influx we're having is American music. So it's almost like putting it down on record just in case it ends. Mm-hmm. And also, like, I would like to hope some kids would hear Council Estate and then do their versions of it coming up. They call you Council Estate, they call you Can't Go Straight, they call you Crime Rate, they call you Can't Go Straight. So it's almost like to preserve the culture. Hopefully some kids are going to listen to some of this album, and because it's very English vocal, they're going to do their vocals are very English.
What do you think about grime music, which is kind of, you know, it takes that US hip-hop, but it mixes it with that English tradition of rave culture or whatever.
And the vocals, I think that's good, with the English accent. Yeah. That's good. But the trouble is, the industry don't support anything too English here. So the kids can rap in English accents or singing in English accents as much as they want. But you've got English labels signing English artists who sign American. Mm-hmm. That don't make no sense to me. If you're in England, if you want to sign an American artist, move to New York or LA.
Let's go back to Noel Westboy. Tell me a bit where you think this album's coming from musically this time around.
For the last 5 years, people have been sending me emails to a fan's website saying, we miss you, when you're coming back, we need your music, blah, blah, blah. And I just realised, it's like, fucking hell, these people have been with me for years and they're passing it on. I've got 15-year-old kids who shouldn't even know who I am. And I don't even like to call them fans, because some of the people who listen to my music, they're not fans, they're like-minded people. And it's almost like they're there for me and I'm there for them. So with this album, I was thinking about them a lot.
There's some really fragile, melodic, kind of beautiful numbers in there, which I think a lot of people who don't know Tricky's work or that will be very surprised to hear.
Some of these songs like Baby Come On and Cross the Bear was to show I can write melodies. I just don't choose to. No, I can do that. I can write pop songs. You know, I could cover a song like Slow, and in the end of the day, I write songs. I could write a song with acoustic guitar, I could write with a drum machine.
Tell us about Slow, you're saying you really
enjoyed. Yeah, I've loved that song for years. I've always wanted to cover it. A lot of people have said, well, I'm surprised you've done Slow. But then again, I've done Love Cats. Some of my best favourite music is 80s pop music. Yeah. But everybody thinks I'm the antichrist when it comes to pop. Like, I got nothing against pop. I'm just against shit pop like there is now, like Justin Timberlake and fucking all that bullshit and the Madonna bullshit. Gary Newman, Tainted Love, The Cure, The Specials, Blondie. I love pop music, but now it's just shit.
So you're not a Timbaland fan?
Not really, nah. I have to give him love, right, because he's talked about me sometimes, because he's been influenced by me, you can hear it in the music. But I think what has happened to a lot of these artists, fame has taken over. Like the guy from the Neptunes, for instance, like
yeah.
Pharrell. I've seen him in videos with Madonna, with Secondhand Emotions, playing the pop star. And I see him in every video that's on TV. It's the fame game, man. You might have the success and money and people knowing you are, but
all the, you know, you're very famous as well for, you know, all the collaborations you've done with, you know, from everybody starting out with Massive Attack to Bjork, PJ Harvey, etc. But you've worked with relatively unknown artists on your new album, and on Veronica you turn the whole song over and you don't appear as a vocalist. Explain to me the decision behind that.
It's simple things like if I'm in my house recording and I'll write some lyrics and I have a melody and I feel like, no, I don't want to do that. Veronica's my friend, she lives in LA. I'd be like, oh, are you around, what are you doing? Lubna, I was seeing her. So I'd be making music, she'd be watching TV. I'd say, come and do a vocal for me. Rod is one of my oldest friends. Joseph, I met in the street. He was busking. So
these tracks are actually named after the people performing in them. Joseph, Veronica.
Yeah.
So, listen, because we're all having to wrap up here and stuff, I'm going to ask you the tricky question I've saved for the end. But you've got a reputation for being an angry, cantankerous figure.
Yeah.
Do you feel that this reputation is deserved? And do you think it still applies?
If you do 10 interviews in a day, you're going to meet one dick. If I say no, I don't want to do this to the record company, you could get called difficult. No, it's just I don't think this is good for me to do. I just don't want to do it. And another thing is, it's hard to write about me, right? People can't tell you what my music is. So it's easy to say it's dark, he's aggressive. The word genius has been used too much with me. Some people are scared of what they don't understand, so they either slag it off straight away and say this is crap, or they call it genius. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it's just people struggling to explain me, and the easiest thing to say is moody, dark. It's just all rumors, you know what I mean, all rumors.
That was tricky. The Noel West Boy is out right this very minute on Domino Records. And I'm pleased to say he didn't walk out on me. Maybe that's because I called him a genius throughout. Now for some more new music and a chance for us to stimulate our collective review gland. Yes, it's time for Singles Club. And joining us here to chat about tunes is the one, the only, the occasionally lonely, Laura Barton. I'm not sure you are
occasionally
lonely.
No, I'm fine.
How are you doing, Laura? Are you well?
I'm a bit hungover as well.
You're a bit hungover? Well, it's fortunate I'm feeling healthy and top of the world, isn't it?
That's not what I heard.
I just didn't have any tea, that was my problem. I was malnourished. Anyway, it's great to have you back in the pod. We have sincerely missed you. And so, Laura, in your honour, we're going to start with a bit of DJ Q featuring MC Bones. And you what? That's You What by DJ Q and MC Bones. DJ Q is well and truly at the forefront of the UK bassline movement. That is what his label, Ministry of Sound, says. But then again, he does have a show on Radio 1 Extra. Whether he commutes from his hometown of Huddersfield to do the show, we don't know. But we do know what we think about this tune, don't we, Rosie?
Yes, it's probably very popular with young people.
Not so
not
popular
very
with
good
old.
Taste in music. I think it's a bit weird. Many years ago, I think it was Dead Prez did that song, like Whoa, and it was great. And then some sort of English hip-hop collective covered it and changed the words to Wablo, and that was quite good. And then years later, we got it, and it sounds terrible.
You were talking about Bassline, about, you know, you were bringing it to my attention 6 months ago or something like that. And at the time, I got the impression that you were actually interested in what it was doing. But has there been, are you a fan of the genre at all?
Yes, some parts of it. Other parts I find extremely boring. But there's a point when you listen to this where you're like, when does 4x4 bassline merge into terrible house music? And I'm not au fait enough with dance music to understand where that line is, if it exists. What I would say about this is that the stuff that's been popular and that's been in the charts has been very vocal heavy, and it's, you know, women singing, and it's very popular. And this hasn't got that aspect to it, and it kind of just sounds a bit ridiculous.
It's maybe something more for the lads.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I think I've got a kind of weird guilty pleasure thing with this, because I know it's dreadful, but it has stuck in my head, and it does make me smile and jiggle. And I wonder whether it's because it's hearing kind of young men, shouty young men, but doing it over this completely cheesy track, it seems like an odd and unusual mixture to me, and I find it quite fresh for that. Laura, can you in any way find anything endearing about this song?
No, I didn't try. I didn't try particularly hard. I agree totally with Rosie and with kind of what you're saying, that it's just so cheesy, and I don't find it fresh. I just find it sounds like some terrible children's TV program or like chicken restaurant jingle or something like that. I there's nothing endearing about it to me, whatever.
Do you know what?
When you put it like that.
I kind of thought that's what was going to happen, but I thought it best to put it out there. It's, you know, it's a new thing. And I do think it's doing something different. And I genuinely am refreshed to hear people making what you might call urban music, which is upbeat. It isn't downbeat. It's not talking about the realities of the street. It's like people having a party. And I think that respect alone, it has some small degree of value, but perhaps we best just leave it there. That is DJ Q featuring MC Bonds. It's available for download from July the 14th and on sale in the shop, so you can buy it in Woolies on July the 21st. Second track on Singles Club is Can't Go Back by Primal Scream. I had someone back in my house. That's Primal Scream with Can't Go Back. This is the first single from Primal Scream's 9th studio album, Beautiful Future. And like the tricky one, it's got a bit of buzz around it. It's produced by Bjorn Littling, him out of Peter Bjorn and John, who's described Beautiful Future as being much more pop and krautrock than before. It sounds a bit like Alan Vega and Suicide. This track, though, was produced by former Uber producer Paul Epworth. He did Bloc Party's Silent Alarm. The video seems to be about lots of beautiful women meeting murderous ends meanwhile. Laura Barton, do you have time for this in your life? Will it squeeze in alongside DJ Q on your iPod?
I will listen to nothing else. No, I don't, I'm afraid. And I think it's the lyrics that I find most affronting in this single and like the whole of the album. I think it's just the absolute dredging the depths of Bobby's powers. It's this one where it's going on about the needle in the arm and she's looking so hot and sexy. And I looked into my baby's eyes and there was nothing there, no one there or ever. I just think give it up, boys. Like, you know,
give what up?
Reveling this heroin chic bollocks that you've been touting around. Like, for a while, you know, Screamadelica or whatever, I thought they were fun and that's it. They're a party band. And with this album, and increasingly in their career, they've just taken themselves more and more seriously and moved away from that kind of joy.
Isn't this track about giving up that heroin chic lifestyle?
It probably is, but he's also touting it. He's also putting himself in the same room as heroin chic and basically reminding you that he was, you know, it's not really freeing them of that image.
That's an interesting point. Rosie, what are your thoughts on this?
I'd written down exactly the lyrics that Laura said because it's just anything that you could feel for it at that point when I heard that, I just thought it was hilarious. And that's part of my problem with Primal Scream generally. It's a fine Bobby Gillespie, really funny. I'm sure that he is hard and cool and dangerous and all that, but I just have always found him very funny, and it's removed any ability for me to take them seriously. I'd prefer to hear them doing this and the sort of country girl and that sort of stuff. This, you know, the sort of fuzzy industrial sounds to it, I like, and I actually think as a song it sounds good. But it's partly the lyrics, and it's partly what Laura was saying about just give it up. It just feels quite tired.
I think I agree with you in that it feels quite tired, but I think the lines you've been quoting, which she looks so hot and sexy, I think the following line is no, not at all. And I think it's like, I think he is trying to articulate something which he hasn't necessarily articulated before about how delusory he was when he was on drugs. And I like the fact that as a post-addiction song, it's fast-paced and it's intense and it's industrial rather than slow and kind of, you know, thoughtful and ponderous. But Laura really wants to interject.
I think Just Say No by the Kids from Grange Hill is much better as a post-drug song.
That's it, isn't it?
She's drunk.
Fortunately, Bobby Gillespie isn't drunk anymore, and Can't Go Back by Primal Scream is out on July the 14th. Final track this week is Annie, and I Know Your Girlfriend Hates Me. She's no good. I'll stop pretending she's misunderstood. I heard you say That's I Know Your Girlfriend Hates Me by Annie. Annie is a poor little orphan who, thanks to a stroke of good fortune, meets a kind-hearted industrialist, Daddy Warbox. With his help, she tries to find her long-lost parents, but soon an evil... Sorry, wrong Annie. Yeah, this Annie is the Norwegian dance floor pop machine whose heartbeat ruled the clubs, and she's now trying to break into the mainstream like Swedish Robin before her. Which may be why, if you were to take a brief tour around Guardian / Music at the moment, you'll find her all over it like a beautiful rash. Rosie.
Yes.
This tune.
Yes.
Big.
I don't know if she will ever be... I think what her appeal is that she won't ever be of, you know, the Girls Aloud kind of big pop star. And I think that what was interesting about her in 2005 with Animal, or Animal, however you want to pronounce it, was that it was so poppy, but it was like really underground. She's only just signed to a major label. But that's what I think is the most interesting thing about her, is that she's making something that sounds totally manufactured, and yet it's her, and it's her persona. I liked her original stuff, like Chewing Gum, I thought was excellent, particularly the Milo remix, still very good. But then you listen to the lyrics of this, I mean, the verses sound like they're there to just prop up the chorus, which is good, and she's got that classic Annie thing, which is, you know, quite sort of bassy electro-pop and then really high-pitched, breathy vocals. But she's, you know, the sentiment is like, I'm hot and your girlfriend's jealous. I mean,
yeah,
that's just...
Is that her own individual persona?
Well, exactly. I'm saying it's like, well, like Chewing Gum kind of had a sort of funny, playful metaphor about chewing boys up and spitting them out and being like chewing gum. And this is just like Pussycat Dolls.
Laura, does this? I know this isn't necessarily your preferred field of music, but I'm wondering about this as well as the lyrical content. Whether it, musically, it's all a little bit familiar.
I think it is, and I also don't think it's quite brave enough. It's got enough little twiddly bits, which I find quite interesting. There's sort of that bubbly noise and that ringy ding bit at the end, but by and large, I think it's too long for a pop song. And I'd prefer the bass line to be bigger, and I'd prefer it, it reminds me a little bit of Britney's Toxic, and I'd prefer it to be more stripped down the way that that was. Otherwise, it does sound too commercial and too Pussycat Dolls, as Rosie was saying.
It sounds like a track that Kylie could have done, yeah. Really, which is, you know, would be edgy for Kylie, but not particularly edgy for somebody who's coming from dance music in the first place.
And she has just signed to Island,
yes,
Universal.
Island.
It's Island. And I, from what I hear, this is the direction she's been pushed in. Not everyone is that happy about it that's working with her. I don't know how she personally feels about it, but it's no coincidence, really, is it? That this sounds like something that Kylie could do, and I don't think Kylie's making particularly good music at the moment, and she's signed to a major label.
It sounds very Rachel Stevens as well, doesn't it? And it is Richard X.
Okay, so another damning verdict. That's what happens when you get proper pop critics on the pod. Everything gets slagged. We're going to have to just have, I don't know, some blood on the tracks on one week, and then we can actually say something nice. Anyway, that track is out on July the 14th, and there's bound to be some tasty, far more bassy remixes to go with it. As ever, this thing gets better if you chip in your thoughts on the week's tunes. It's Annie, Primal Scream and DJ Q we want to hear about, and you can post your brain drops at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Here's some more exports from Tunisia that are out in the next 7 days. Shia Shash, Left Behind. Back on Turds, Take It As It Comes. Madonna, Give It To Me. Neon Neon, I Told Her on Alderney. That there was this week's lovingly crafted montage. And included were Neon Neon and Griff Rees and Boom Bip of Neon Neon, by way of a massive, ugly crowbar of a link, were guests of ours at Glastonbury the other weekend. We did 4 shows from the fields of Pilton, and they're well worth a pillage. You can find them at Guardian / audio. But moving on to now, Laura, how was your Glastonbury?
It was actually one of my favourite Glastonbury's. I had to do a lot of work. You don't need to hear that. But when I had fun, I had a lot of fun.
How was your exercise? Because you were interviewing lots of people on a farm, what yes. you built. Yes. An ersatz farm around the back of the park stage. And you got through about, I don't know, 60 interviews over the course of the weekend or something?
Something like that, yeah. So I got a bit bored of talking to people about farming. But it's amazing how much pop stars know about farming.
Is it? Mm. Who knew the most?
Candy Staton knew shed loads.
Candy Staton.
And Vampire Weekend.
Well, you might expect sort of, you know, they probably did a module.
They'd worked in a sheep farm. But do you know who was rubbish? The Wurzels and the Levellers.
The people you most naturally associate with Mother Earth.
With the land.
Rosie.
Yeah.
We all kind of came away feeling that Glastow have got
tired.
It. Yeah. That too. But we all came away feeling upbeat about it and feeling that the lustre of the festival had returned somewhat after a few dreadful years. After a little bit of distance, was that due to post-Glastow giddiness or...?
No, I agree. I think two things. The weather obviously helped. It rained on Thursday and Friday, I think, but after that it was great. And actually it was better that it wasn't completely dry and dusty. And yet the Jay-Z thing, just there was like a real sense of momentum there. It was this build-up to this event. I don't think anyone that watched it felt disappointed with it. And everyone that I saw afterwards was like, that was great, bar about one person who thought it was atrocious.
And it felt like the people who were there really wanted to be there rather than...
And it did feel like a younger crowd.
It definitely looked like a younger crowd too. I wonder whether... I think the assumption is that because everybody's come back and given it good word of mouth, that the demand for tickets will be higher next year. It'll be interesting to see whether those youngsters... are still around too. Well, you can also, there's still lots of bloggage and our whole special report up on Guardian/music, so you can still contribute your thoughts on this festival. But yeah, I think this will probably be the final word and we shall move on because there's lots more festivals to come in the summer. Right, that's it for this week's Singles Club. Rosie's texticular reviews are up and online each week at Guardian/music, where you can check the vids out too. Next on Music Weekly, we're going back, way back, back into time. Right, that's the Ragga Twins with Juggling. The Ragga Twins, right, for people who do not know, and there might be quite a few people out there who don't, are two brothers who go by the name of Flinty Badman and Demon Rocker. Though it does seem unlikely that that's the sort of names that appear on their passports. The Twins were famous in the early 90s as being one of the first acts to fuse the burgeoning sounds of rave music with hip-hop and, of course, ragga. It was a crossover of sounds which laid the foundations for both drum and bass and grime. And to commemorate their influence on the whole process of sounds, Soul Jazz have just released a compilation of their best tunes. I met the brothers the other week, and I started by asking them how they felt about having their very own retrospective.
I think a lot of people can't get some of that stuff no more, especially some of the Unity stuff.
And that was the sound system that you were first involved in?
Not first, but first proper. I was on another sound before that called Jamarcus, but that was like a stepping stone to Unity, which was the biggest sound in London.
And what
England.
Was it? What did it play? Was it mainly reggae or?
Mainly reggae. You play like two soul tunes for the girls.
For people who kind of aren't so familiar with that, it would just actually be all the amps, all the speakers, and you just take to parties, set up.
And the selector would come, who was Ribs, and he'd come with his tunes and play, and me and Flinty would come later on. And we'd just, you know, nice up the dance. The selector would play the vocal, and then me and Flinty would do our thing.
And when did it start going from you kind of chatting on reggae tunes into chatting on dance music?
Well, that changed in like 1990 when we decided to leave the reggae sound system, and Shut Up and Dance was putting out a single, and they sampled D-Man off of one of the tapes from the reggae sound system, and D-Man was like, yeah, that's cool, and he just spoke to him and said like, well, he wants to get into some different areas of music, so Smiley told us to come and see him. Well, he told D-Man brought me along, and we went to see him, and you know, the rest is history. So.
Yeah. Tell us about Shut Up and Dance and how significant it was as a label at that time.
Coming from reggae music, we didn't really know much about. We knew about it from what we read in the paper, mainly because of the E-pills.
Yeah.
We knew that we had some people that used to come to Unity. One of them came up to Flinty and said one day, God, your tunes are bussing up the dances, you know what I mean? So what tunes? Shut Up and Dance tunes, they're killing it. Because at that time, we never used to go. We just, you know, when we started PAing, it was all right. And then gradually, as more PAs we done, the more we enjoyed the music and we got into it, and that was it. I mean, it kind of switched. We stopped going to reggae things and was predominantly going to dance, acid, whatever you want to call it at that time.
What are the tracks you're most proud of looking back, and which ones do you think stand the test of time the best?
Iron Lady, because that was my first ever recording on Unity.
That's your thatch bashing one, yeah?
Yeah. I was so nervous going to the studio for the first time. I'm used to turntables and a mic in your hand. Now you've got this mic just hanging down from the ceiling. And
Juggling.
I keep forgetting the name.
That's my favourite.
Juggling, that is my favourite track of all times.
That is a tune.
And that Chilipi Lipi Long Voice. So he was just in the studio doing Chilipi Lipi Long Voice. And that was just to warm up for him to get into lyric. But they liked it and they used it wherever we got. Even now, when we do that now in the Jungle Race, the crowd goes absolutely mad.
With almost everything, it kind of has a peak and then things start to fall apart slightly. And in some of your music, what you brought, particularly in things like Illegal Gunshot and stuff, you brought a bit of social realism into this. And probably a lot of people would be familiar with the story of, you know, places like the Hacienda, which started out as rave capitals and then ended up being shut down, shootouts going on inside. And this was not uncommon across Clubland.
Yeah.
And you must have seen this change happen yourselves.
Yeah. It wasn't too much gunplay, I would say, not so bad as what's going on at the moment now on the streets and that. Yeah, but when that happened, you know, the music, even the music, they changed because they was blaming it on the reggae. So the producers started. That's when I think the drum and bass came in because they started not using no samples, no reggae samples, and that.
And you're obviously involved in drum and bass and stuff still. Do you listen to much in the way of grime music, for example, which is perhaps, in some ways, the clearest link between what you were doing then and what's going on?
No. I do, because my son, he's an MC now, right, and he's in that field. When it first came out, it wasn't for me, mm-hmm, I must admit, because, you know, the lyrics that they were chatting, that's not what I want my child to be listening to,
you know what I mean? Kind of the gangsterism.
The gangsterism, you know what I mean? But some of them lyrics were going a little bit too far. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes a little gunplay gets in your lyrics, but nothing too serious. Mm-hmm. We don't go out to write them kind of lyrics because...
Yeah, like, not, we don't write things like, I'm going to shoot you, yeah, I'm going to come for you this and I'm going to do you that. Know? We don't.
We'll most probably write something like, if you mess with us, that might happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, sort of thing, which is kind of different.
Kind of, but at the same time, if somebody was to pretend that they were thinking in your shoes, do you not think that they might think that that was advocating something?
I still see myself as a non-violent artist. And, you know, back in the day, they wanted to blame video games for kids doing certain things. You can't blame kid video games. You can't blame films. It's just the individual, you know. I've played video games. I've watched them same films. I ain't done none of that stuff. If someone hears a lyric and that turns them a bit nutty, that means that person is not right in the head anyway. Yeah.
Well, that was Demon Rocker and Flinty Badman, aka the Ragga Twins. Two nicer blokes you couldn't hope to meet, and their retrospective on Soul Jazz is out right now. Okay, well, because we've been away from the blog, and indeed away from internal podding for the past couple of weeks, not much of your comments to read out. We do have quite a few new friends on Facebook, which I had to print out in a little bit of a rush. Sorry if I end up reading what school somebody went to rather than their name, but please accept my apologies. We've got Luca Ivanovic, Glyn Blakeborough, Dayo Onamusi, James McMahon, Nat Davis, Siobhan Averill, Flora Storm, and Gemma Curry. Oh, and Jack Murray too, who are amongst our recent friends. So big up to all of yous. And you can keep up to date with what we're doing in Guardian/Music on our Facebook page. We've introduced a little Twitter element now, so we're going to keep on pinging you little bits and newses about what we're up to. So please keep an eye on that. That, however, is pretty much it for this week. We've really loved having your company this week. Please join us next. Gutenberg.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.